Live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studios, this is Bloomberg Daybreak for Thursday, January 10th, 2019. Coming up this hour.
The New Year rally in global equities stalls while treasuries lead a broad advance in bonds.
Trade sentiment slides as the U.S. and China offer no concrete details on talks.
The outlook for Theresa May's Brexit plans darkens.
And the government shutdown threatens a banner year for IPOs.
President Trump heads to Texas to push for a border wall after walking out of a meeting with congressional leaders. I'm Michael Barr. More ahead.
I'm John Stashower in sports. The Jets have decided to hire Adam Gase as their new head coach. He just got fired by Miami and Brooklyn, a comeback win for the Nets.
That's all straight ahead on Bloomberg Daybreak on Bloomberg 1130 New York, Bloomberg 99.1 Washington, D.C., Bloomberg 1061 Boston, Bloomberg 960 San Francisco, Sirius XM 119, and around the world on BloombergRadio.com and via the Bloomberg Business app.
Good morning, I'm Karen Moscow.
And I'm Nathan Hager. Bloomberg Daybreak brought to you by Sector Spider ETFs. Why buy a single stock when you can invest in the entire sector? Visit SectorSPDRS.com or call 1-866-SECTOR-ETF.
And global equities are slumping while bonds gain. It is 6:01 on Wall Street, and we check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. S&P futures are down 15 points. Dow futures down 112. NASDAQ futures down 43. The DAX in Germany is down 0.33%. CAC in Paris down 0.7%. FTSE 100 down 0.1%. Nikkei 225 in Japan fell 1.3%. The Hang Seng in Hong Kong up 0.2%. 10-year Treasury up 4/32, yield 2.69%. Yield on the 2-year 2.53%. NYMEX crude oil down 0.8% or 44 cents to $51.91 a barrel. COMEX gold is up 0.2% or $2.10 to $12.94.10 an ounce. The euro $1.1528 and the yen 108.12. Nathan.
Karen, China's commenting on its trade talks with the U.S. The commerce minister says negotiations were broad, deep, and detailed. Bloomberg Daybreak Asia anchor Brian Curtis reports from Hong Kong.
The ministry said the two sides implemented the consensus reached earlier by the two presidents, and it said both trade and structural issues were discussed in the meetings. The two seem largely in sync now over their interpretation of the talks, although the U.S. was slightly more upbeat. In any case, the trade war rhetoric has been toned down, and the two seem more methodical now toward finding a deal. In Hong Kong, I'm Brian Curtis, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, Brian, thank you. We're also getting word from China's vice president. He says the country is committed to its own path, but also that cooperation between Beijing and Washington is the best way forward. Still, that cooperation could be hard to achieve. Bloomberg's John Tucker joins us live with that story. Good morning, John.
Good morning, Karen. The White House is pushing for a way to make sure China delivers on any commitments reached in the deal. The Office of U.S. Trade Representative Robert Lighthizer says it wants any agreement to include ongoing verification and effective enforcement. The Trump administration has criticized China for failing to live up to past promises, including a pledge to open up the Chinese economy to more trade and investment after it joined the World Trade Organization back in 2001. John Tucker, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, John, thanks. So both sides may be saying the right things, but neither side is giving concrete details in its statements. That had the New Year equity rally taking a pause in Asia. Bloomberg's Juliet Sally has details from Singapore. Good morning, Juliet.
Good morning, Nathan and Karen. Well, a weaker dollar pushed the yen higher and Japanese equities lower at the same time as Goldman Sachs trimmed their target for Japanese stocks. The Nikkei 225 closed down by 1.3% in Tokyo. The CSI 300 in China was down 0.2%. After five sessions of gains, the MSCI Asia Pacific Index slightly weaker Thursday. In Singapore, I'm Juliet Sali, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Juliet, thank you. Stocks in Europe also posting losses today. Bloomberg's Sebastian Salek joins us live from London with the latest. Good morning, Sebastian.
Good morning, Karen and Nathan. Stocks down some 0.3% now after we await the outcome from US-China trade talks. You've got the majority of sectors lower gains from utilities, banks and real estate. Industrial goods and services are biggest losers, dragged down by the lighting specialist Osram Licht, the CEO of that company, warning about dark clouds ahead. Live from London, I'm Sebastian Salek, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Speaking of darker, Sebastian, the outlook for Theresa May's Brexit plan is darkening. That has the UK Prime Minister openly contemplating a plan B. Bloomberg's Alex Morales reports from London.
Theresa May suffered her second defeat in 2 days in the House of Commons, losing control of the timetable for setting out the next steps if, as expected, Parliament votes down her Brexit deal on January the 15th. In the aftermath of Wednesday's defeat, May's office publicly discussed for the first time what she would do if she loses that critically important vote, saying the Premier would respond quickly and provide certainty on the way forward. Opposition Labour Party leader Jeremy Corbyn, meanwhile, will deliver a major speech on Brexit. He's expected to call for May to announce a general election if she loses next week's vote. In London, Alex Morales, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, Alex, thank you. Here in the U.S., it looks like the Federal Reserve could place interest rates on hold through at least March. Minutes from the central bank's December meeting show officials preaching patience on policy. Alicia Levine is chief strategist at BNY Mellon Investment Management.
Well, I'm happy to see that there was caution in the minutes because it means that the market didn't mug the Fed. If you remember, after the hike, the market sold off 9%. And then just last Friday, Powell was very dovish in his comments. And there's a concern if there's that much of a difference between the FOMC and what the market is saying. And you just don't want it to be a messaging issue.
And today we get messaging from Jerome Powell again. The Fed chairman sits down for a conversation with Carlyle Group co-founder David Rubenstein at the Economic Club of Washington. We'll bring that to you live on Bloomberg Radio and Television at 12:45 p.m. Wall Street time.
That conversation will happen with the partial government shutdown in the U.S. in its 20th day. It's starting to threaten the IPO outlook for 2019. Andrew Ramonis reports from the Bloomberg 99.1 newsroom in Washington.
The timing for the Uber and Lyft IPOs could be thrown off because of the shutdown. There's paperwork right now at the SEC that, you know, Uber and Lyft haven't received responses to. There's just a cadence that gets thrown off when there's a shutdown like this, and things could be slowed down on the IPO front.
Uber and Lyft have been targeting their IPOs for the first half of the year. Sources tell Bloomberg so far neither company's received comments from the SEC on their filings.
And some news on Ford this morning with word of major job cuts at the automaker's European operations. Ford Motor plans to shed thousands of jobs in the region as part of a broad review. It's also not ruling out shutting some production plants in Europe. Futures this morning are losing steam. S&P futures down about 16 points right now. And this is Bloomberg.
All right, thank you, Karen. It is 6:07 on Wall Street. Time to get the latest world and national headlines, including a trip outside the Beltway for President Trump. Good morning, Bloomberg's Michael Barr.
Good morning, Nathan. President Donald Trump is taking the government shutdown battle to the U.S.-Mexico border. The president will visit McAllen, Texas today, where he is expected to visit a Border Patrol station and a section of the border. Yesterday, President Trump walked out of a meeting with congressional leaders as efforts to end the shutdown fell apart. Bloomberg's Bob Moon reports.
They sat down again, hoping for some kind of agreement.
The president walked into the room and passed out candy. It was true.
And left with top House Republican Kevin McCarthy, top Senate Democrat Chuck Schumer, and Vice President Mike Pence unable to agree on what caused the meeting to end so bitterly.
Schumer continued to raise his voice.
He sort of slammed the table and said, "We have nothing to discuss."
I don't recall him ever raising his voice or slamming his hand.
Leaving hanging the question of whether the president is any closer to declaring a national emergency to seize the funds he needs for his border wall.
My threshold will be if I can't make a deal with people that are unreasonable.
Bob Moon, Bloomberg Daybreak.
The partial government shutdown has entered its 20th day. Millions of low-income Americans could have a harder time affording food if the shutdown continues into February. They could lose food stamps, and food inspections and drug reviews are at risk as the slowdown slows the Food and Drug Administration. Acting Attorney General Matt Whitaker is being called to testify to the House Judiciary Committee by January 29th to answer Democrats' questions about whether he should recuse himself from overseeing Special Counsel Robert Mueller's Russia investigation. Committee Chairman Gerald Nadler suggested in a letter to Whitaker that the Justice Department is trying to slow walk his previous commitment to appear before the newly Democratic-led panel. South Korea's leader says it looks like a second summit is on the horizon between the U.S. and North Korea. Bloomberg's Peter Pei has more from Seoul.
South Korean President Moon Jae-in says a meeting between U.S. President Donald Trump and North Korean leader Kim Jong-un will happen soon, signaling stalled talks about dismantling North Korea's nuclear arsenal may be back on track. Moon's remarks during his annual press conference came hours after both Beijing and Pyongyang said their leaders backed a second Trump-Kim summit. In Seoul, Peter Pei, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Global News, 24 hours a day, on air and at TikTok, on Twitter, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg, Nathan.
Thanks, Michael. 6:09 on Wall Street. Time for the Bloomberg NBC Sports Update. Here's John Stashar.
Nathan, the last four Jets coaches had one thing in common. They all had virtually no previous head coaching experience. Jets fans were hoping that streak would end, and it has. But, well, the new coach, Adam Gase, has experience. He was not successful in Miami. 3 years, an under 500 record, and he just got fired by the Dolphins. Gase got the Jets job because of his history working with quarterbacks. He was the offensive coordinator in Denver when Peyton Manning had an MVP season. His job with the Jets will be to groom their young QB, Sam Darnold. That's the trend all around the NFL. Cleveland promoted Freddie Kitchens to head coach because he had success as a Browns assistant working with Baker Mayfield. It's the reason Arizona, who has a young QB in Josh Rosen, just hired a coach in Cliff Kingsbury, who went 25-30 at Texas Tech and just got fired.
There's nothing I can say today that's going to change that. And I know it's about the work that started yesterday and what we do from this point forward. And that's how I'm attacking that. I love Texas Tech. I love my time there. I love those players there. But this is a new chapter, a great opportunity, and an incredible organization to work for.
Denver's new coach is Vic Fangio. He was coaching the defense in Chicago. Only Miami and Cincinnati are still looking. Nets hosting Atlanta went from down 19 to winning by 16. They beat the Hawks 116-100. They've won 13 of the last 17. They're in sixth place in the Eastern Conference. College basketball, Rutgers with a 64-61 upset of Ohio State. Seton Hall, 1-point win over Butler. Fordham lost to Duquesne. Syracuse beat Clemson. And a Big East record, 53 points scored by Marquette's Marcus Howard in an overtime win at Creighton. With the Bloomberg NBC Sports Update, I'm John Stashower. Nathan?
All right, John, thanks. In other sports news, New Jersey's Supreme Court has ruled the National Football League did not violate state consumer fraud laws with its ticketing policies for the 2014 Super Bowl at MetLife. A New Jersey man claimed he had to pay more than double the $800 face value for tickets on the secondary market because the NFL released just 1% of its tickets through a lottery. That was the policy at the time. But Josh Finkelman argued that policy violated a state law that requires 95% of tickets to be made public. Coming up on 6:12 on Wall Street, stay with Bloomberg Radio for more Fed speak from the chairman, Jerome Powell. He sits down for a conversation with Carlyle Group co-founder David Rubenstein at 12:45 p.m. Wall Street time on Bloomberg Radio.
Global news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Bloomberg Business app, and at TikTok on Twitter. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
And I'm Karen Moscow, 6:17 on Wall Street. Bloomberg Daybreak out on customer terminals, bringing you all the news you need to start your day. Let's get a check of the latest headlines with Aaron Roman at the Bloomberg Daybreak desk. Good morning, Aaron.
Good morning, Karen. President Trump heads to the border today to rally support for his wall. The trip comes a day after he stormed out of a meeting with Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer. Meanwhile, the House passed funding bills to reopen some agencies, including the Treasury, SEC, and IRS. But the Senate won't vote on them as long as the president vows to veto. Ford will cut thousands of jobs in Europe. The automaker may also close production plans as aging models and Brexit plague its business there. And China is describing trade talks with the U.S. as, quote, broad, deep, detailed. The White House is pushing for a way to ensure Beijing delivers on its commitments in any deal the two nations strike. For all the news you need to start your day, check out Daybreak on your mobile phone on the Bloomberg Anywhere app. Karen?
Aaron, thank you. Right now, S&P futures are down 14 points. Dow futures down 103. NASDAQ futures down 40. The DAX in Germany is down 0.25%. 10-year Treasury up 3/32. Yield 2.69%. The yield on the 2-year, 2.53%. NYMEX crude oil down 0.6% or 34 cents to $52.02 a barrel. COMEX gold up 0.2% or $2.50 to $12.94.50 an ounce. The euro, $1.1536, the yen, 108.07. That's a Bloomberg Business Flash. Now here's Michael Barr with more on what's going on around the world. Michael.
Karen, South Korea's Moon Jae-in says the second summit between President Donald Trump and Kim Jong-un is imminent, even as the North Korean leader aired new complaints about his difficulties with the U.S. The remarks by Moon, who has sought to bridge the divide between the U.S. and North Korea, came hours after Kim and Chinese President Xi Jinping issued statements expressing support for another meeting with President Trump. There could be another name in the race for the White House. CBS reports Democratic Senator Kamala Harris will announce her candidacy on or around Martin Luther King Day. In sports, the New York Jets are expected to formally announce today that they have hired former Miami Dolphins coach Adam Gase as their head coach. In the NBA, the Nets won along with the Celtics and Wizards. Global news 24 hours a day on air and at TikTok on Twitter, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg, John.
Michael, thank you. 620 on Wall Street, live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studios. I'm John Tucker. This is Bloomberg Daybreak. After the release of the latest Fed minutes, some investors are saying, wait a minute. Let's get some expert opinion now from Bloomberg economist Tim Mahidi. I'm going to suggest this is as close to a Powell put as you're going to get. Disabuse me of that, if you will.
It's funny. If you think that now, I think that's what the thought should have been earlier in the year, because I don't think the communication has changed all that much, or last year, I should say. I'm still in 2018. The Fed minutes showed that exactly what a lot of us who watch the Fed thought, which is the economy is strong, but they're concerned about financial markets. And so their movement down from 3 to 2 rates in the dots just merely reflects some of the members' nervousness over the recent fluctuations, but it doesn't change the fact that the economy ended 2018 on a strong note, and even with some moderation, should still be fairly strong next year.
Was it more dovish than expected?
You know, I we're in a time right now where I think it's like anytime Fed communication comes out, it's like a Rorschach test. You can just look at it and see whatever you want. So I'm going to say no, but I think there's definitely an argument to be said that there may be more than some people thought. I think what's most important, and this is not just with the minutes, but with all the communication recently, is that the Fed has been acknowledging financial markets. I think that message got lost in the late fall, early winter, and I think they're trying to circle back.
Okay, there's no disconnect between what the minutes we got said yesterday and what Powell said at his news conference?
I don't think there's a disconnect. I think there's just a difference of opinion. You can see it among the regional presidents who have spoken lately. You've had a bunch of folks come out and move down their forecast. I think the core of the FOMC probably still sees the underlying economic fundamentals as potentially having some inflationary pressure later in the year. But that's all contingent on if we get through this financial market volatility. You know, it's funny. Right now, everything seems dire because the market's moving around. There's global growth concerns and trade concerns. But 6 months from now, we could be sitting in a whole different world. And then you're sitting on just past a year of strong economic growth and wondering if inflation is going to pick up. So I think they're hedging.
Okay. It sounds like you're hedging too, though.
I'm definitely hedging.
What's your forecast, the Bloomberg economics team?
Well, you know, we still have the potential to have some rate hikes for next year because of what I said. But I think there's no way that March is going to go. And that's partially because it's bookended between two big events with the trade negotiation deadline and then Brexit at the end of the month. There's no reason to go in March, so I think March is off the table. Now, it's possible, and I don't want to say likely, but it's possible with 50% probability that we get through this financial market instability with a couple months of good data, and then we start to see inflationary pressures pick up. Inflation lags growth. So strong 2018 means inflation in 2019, and there's a lot of resource utilization that's been tightened. And so I think that's possible you can see that in the back half of the year. And at 1.9, I think the Fed might go once or twice if they really think that there's a need to keep inflation in line. That's not what some members of the committee are saying, but I think there's still people inside the Fed that believe that.
Okay, so 1 in 20. Is there a cut anytime in the future?
The like talk of cut,
2020 depends on who you talk to, but it seems like I'm hearing more and more that the R word.
Yeah, I'm not sure if it's still true, but the market at one point was pricing in a cut in 2020. And I think that is, first, if you're pricing in a cut, you should price in more than a 25 basis point cut, because then we're in a crisis and we're cutting full percentage points. I don't see the Fed cutting absent a recession or the onset of what looks like one. So I think at most they pause and wait, but the economy's in a good place. I mean, the job market will remain strong. Growth is going to remain above trend next year.
And those wages, you know, you talk about inflation, that's kind of a look in the rearview mirror, but what are their indicators coming up that you're going to be looking at for signs of inflation?
Well, it's hard to know. The government's closed, so we're not getting a lot of data, and who knows when it's going to open. But I'd say, you want to look at the wage data, you want to look at some of the survey data, which has been soft, but I think you're going to see a bit of a pickup in February and March. And, you know, January might just be a bad month because of the shutdown, but the shutdown's happening at the beginning of the quarter, so there's time for the economy to make it back up by the end. So I guess I would say, like, let's all hold our breath and not decide that the Fed's that we're in a bad place yet. I think there's still some stuff coming down the road.
Bloomberg economist Tim Mahidi, and I know that Tim at 12:45 will be listening to Bloomberg Radio and Television as Fed Chair Powell speaks at the Economic Club of Washington, sitting down with David Rubenstein. You're listening to Bloomberg Daybreak. Thanks, Tim.
Thanks, John. Bloomberg Daybreak brought to you by Hyde Park Antiques and the 65th Annual Winter Show featuring experts in fine art and antiques from around the globe, January 18th through the 27th at the historic Park Avenue Armory.
Broadcasting live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studio in New York. Bloomberg 1130 to Washington, D.C. Bloomberg 991 to Boston. Bloomberg 1061 to San Francisco. Bloomberg 960 to the country. Sirius XM Channel 119 and around the globe. The Bloomberg Business App and BloombergRadio.com. This is Bloomberg Daybreak.
6:30 on Wall Street. Good morning. I'm Nathan Hager.
And I'm Karen Moscow. We are just about 3 hours away from the opening of U.S. trading. Let's get you up to date on the news you need to know at this hour. The 2019 stock rally is stalling this morning. S&P futures are down 0.4%. The Stocks Europe 600 index is off by 0.4%. And in Asia, Japan's Nikkei dropped 1.3%.
Well, global stocks had rallied amid optimism around U.S.-China trade talks, but so far we haven't gotten concrete details from either side. Bloomberg's John Tucker's here with more on that. Good morning, John.
And good morning, Nathan. China characterized the latest round of talks as broad, deep, and detailed. It suggests the two sides covered enforcement of intellectual property rights, a key U.S. priority. A U.S. statement didn't say whether progress had been achieved. President Trump and Chinese President Xi have given their officials until March 1st to reach an accord on structural changes. John Tucker, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, John, thank you. Investors will also be listening to Jerome Powell today. The Fed chairman sits down for a conversation with Carlyle Group co-founder David Rubenstein at the Economic Club of Washington. We'll bring it to you live on Bloomberg Radio and Television at 12:45 p.m. Wall Street time.
In the U.K., Prime Minister Theresa May is openly contemplating a Brexit Plan B. There are growing signs that Parliament will reject the deal she reached with the European Union and try to take charge of what happens next.
Ford Motor planning major job cuts at its European operations. The automaker plans to shed thousands of jobs in the region as part of a broad review.
Shares of Bed Bath & Beyond are up 16% in early trading. The retailer reported it was ahead of schedule for some longer-term financial goals like moderating profit declines and growing net earnings.
Shares of Tesco up more than 2% in London, UK's biggest retailer, posting Christmas sales that beat estimates.
It is 6:32 on Wall Street. That's time for the Volatility Index Report. The VIX fell yesterday to close at 1998. Separately, in today's extended morning trading, the VIX is currently at 20.84. Karen, that's this morning's Volatility Report.
And futures this morning, Nathan, are lower. S&P futures are down 15 points. Dow futures down 105. And NASDAQ futures down 43. The DAX in Germany is down a third of a percent. 10-year Treasury up 4/32, yield 2.69%. Yield on the 2-year, 2.53%. NYMEX crude oil down about 0.9 of a percent, down 45 cents at $51.91 a barrel. COMEX gold is up 0.2%, up $2.50 at $12.94.50 an ounce. The euro at $1.1534, and the yen is at 108.01. And straight ahead, we have the latest world and national news. And this is Bloomberg.
All right, thank you, Karen. It is 6:33 on Wall Street. Let's bring in Michael Barr to tell us what else is going on in the world. Michael?
Thank you very much, Nathan. President Trump takes his appeal for a southern border wall with a visit to McAllen, Texas today as he pushes for funding for a barrier. Yesterday, the president walked out of a White House meeting with congressional leaders after talks to end the partial government shutdown collapsed. The president, in a tweet, said the meeting was a waste of time, blaming House Speaker Nancy Pelosi and Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer for being unwilling to negotiate.
I don't care politically. I'm doing what's right for the country. But I'll tell you, it's a very bad political issue for the Democrats. That I can tell you.
After the meeting, Senator Schumer accused the president of throwing a temper tantrum.
He sort of slammed the table,
And when Leader Pelosi said she didn't agree with the wall, he just walked out and said, we have nothing to discuss.
All of this comes as the shutdown has entered its 20th day. There are new reports that there will be a second summit between President Trump and Kim Jong-un. Bloomberg's Ed Baxter has the story.
A flurry of activity came at the conclusion of the meetings between China's President Xi Jinping and North Korean leader Kim Jong-un. State media on both sides pushing out stories that both support another Trump-Kim summit. Then South Korean President Moon Jae-in said it would take place soon and that it would be a turning point for peace. He is also suggesting the U.S. ease sanctions so that the two Koreas can start joint economic projects. In San Francisco, I'm Ed Baxter, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Secretary of State Mike Pompeo is in Cairo today to deliver a major speech outlining U.S. policy in the Middle East. Bloomberg's Nick Wadhams in Washington reports it's part of Pompeo's week-long trip to the region.
He's expected to emphasize the U.S. commitment to its partners and will look to ease concerns about the U.S. strategy after President Donald Trump unexpectedly announced he would withdraw troops from Syria. Officials now suggest the pullout won't happen anytime soon. In Washington, Nick Wadhams, Bloomberg Daybreak.
U.S. health officials are pushing for development of a pain meter. The National Institutes of Health stresses the goal isn't a lie detector for pain, but to spur better treatment. The device that peeks into patients' eyes is among the approaches in early stage studies. The theory is that patterns of pupil reactions could signal pain and what drug might help. Global News 24 hours a day on air and at TikTok on Twitter, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg, Nathan.
Thanks, Michael. 6:35 on Wall Street. John Stashower has our Bloomberg NBC Sports update.
Nathan, the Jets have their new coach, 40-year-old Adam Gase. His hiring will be a tough sell to Jets fans, considering Gase just got fired after three mediocre seasons as the head coach in Miami. Although, while coaching the Dolphins, he did go 5-1 against the Jets. The Gase hiring is a surprise. The favorite was considered to be Mike McCarthy, who also just got fired, but he took Green Bay to the playoffs 9 times and won a Super Bowl. But the Jets are continuing a recent NFL trend. Hire a young head coach to work with a young quarterback. It worked with Sean McVay and the LA Rams, and now everyone's doing it. Not only the Jets, Cleveland Browns just promoted Freddie Kitchens to head coach, although Denver went with Vic Fangio, who's a defensive coach. He gets his first head coaching job after 33 years. As an assistant. Another win for the Nets. They came from 19 down at Barclays. They beat Atlanta 116-100. D'Angelo Russell, 23 points.
They challenged us tonight. You know, we came out a little, you know, slow, but we picked it up. You know, picked it up our intensity. Picked it up on defense, and we got the win. But you playing against good teams like that, you can't play with fire like that. And we clearly know that. Just thank God we got that win.
Nets have won 13 of the last 17. They're just a game under 500. College basketball, Rutgers' first Big Ten win, 64-61 upset of 16th-ranked Ohio State. Seton Hall got by Butler, 76-75, 31 points for the Pirates' Miles Powell. Fordham lost to Duquesne, 66-61. The Milwaukee Brewers have signed free agent catcher Yasmani Grandel, who had been with the Dodgers. With the Bloomberg NBC Sports Update, I'm John Stashower. Nathan?
All right, John, thank you. It's 6:37 on Wall Street.
The following is an editorial from Bloomberg Opinion.
40 years ago, military veterans made up roughly 3/4 of Congress. By 2017, the proportion had dwindled to fewer than 1 in 5. But the elections of 2018 were a turning point. At least 170 veterans received major party nominations for national office, and at least 75 won office. Americans should care about this. Congress needs the perspective of former service members, particularly those who've served in the post-9/11 era. A shared background in the armed forces might help check excessive partisanship. The new lawmakers can also give veterans' issues more of the attention they deserve. And former service members might help push for a new legal authorization for America's sprawling conflicts against terrorism. As a group, veterans will bring discipline, duty, and a commitment to country before politics. Congress has lately been lacking in those traits. This editorial was written by the Bloomberg Opinion Editorial Board. I'm David Shipley. For more Bloomberg Opinion, please go to Bloomberg.com/opinion or OPI and go on the Bloomberg Terminal.
This has been Bloomberg Opinion.
You can hear Bloomberg Opinion editorials every weekday at this time. 6:38 on Wall Street, time for the Bloomberg Green Report. Here's Bob Moon.
House Democrats and environmental groups are pressing the Trump administration to close all national parks during the partial government shutdown, warning they're at risk of permanent damage from recent vandalism and overflowing waste. The Interior Department's funding for national parks lapsed as part of the shutdown, and despite efforts by Acting Interior Secretary David Bernhardt to use entrance fees to keep some staff at the parks, several are starting to shut down. To make the point, California Congressman Jared Huffman delivered boxes full of trash picked up at national parks to the White House. He left other waste behind.
They said that some of their restroom facilities are becoming so unmaintained and despoiled, they're worried that when government does reopen, their staff may not be able to actually handle. They may have to call in hazmat teams.
Among the parks closed in recent days, Joshua Tree in California, where the National Park Service reported damage from off-road driving and destruction of some of the park's iconic trees. That's the Bloomberg Green Business Report. I'm Bob Moon.
Thanks, Bob. 6:39 on Wall Street. Authoritarian regimes are paying big bucks to K Street lobbyists hoping for some positive results. Nancy Lyons is in the Bloomberg 99.1 Washington newsroom with details.
Tens of millions of dollars are being spent.
You have Saudi Arabia spending, you know, more than $20 million, but you also have the United Arab Emirates spending almost $30 million.
Bloomberg Government's Megan Wilson says more than 60 firms represented countries with the worst human rights records.
It's not only direct lobbying with government officials like we think of. It's also public relations where you talk to the media about your client, you know, try to get positive, you know, stories.
The lobbyists say they're also helping their clients learn how the U.S. government works. In Washington, Nancy Lyons, Bloomberg Radio.
Thanks, Nancy. News from Target crossing the Bloomberg terminal this morning. It's announced holiday comp sales grew 5.7% in the holiday November-December period. That reaffirms full-year guidance. The company also says its CFO, Kathy Smith, will be retiring. That's among a series of leadership changes at Target. It is now conducting a search for a new chief financial officer. Target has yet to trade in the pre-market. Futures pointed to a lower open on Wall Street. This is Bloomberg Daybreak. Coming up, the morning call brought to you by Columbia Bank. Yield Plus Checking from Columbia Bank takes the stable growth of a high-rate CD and combines it with the freedom of a checking account. Visit a branch today or ColumbiaBankOnline.com. Count on Columbia.
There's global news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Bloomberg Business app, and at TikTok on Twitter. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
And I'm Karen Moscow. Futures moving lower this morning. Let's go to the First Word breaking news desk for today's morning call. Here's Bill Maloney. Bill, good morning.
And good morning, Karen. That's right. U.S. futures are under pressure right now with Dow futures down 93 points. S&P's dropped 13 and NASDAQ futures declined by 40. Oil is trading lower and the U.S. 10-year yield at 2.69%. Japan fell 1.3% overnight, while European markets are also trading lower, led by declines in France. Back in the U.S. on the economic front at 8:30, initial jobs claims, and Fed's Powell will be speaking at noon in Washington. After the bell last night, Bed Bath & Beyond Q3 EPS beat estimates. Shares are up 17% in the pre-market. And in other news, Target reaffirmed fiscal year views. Holiday comp sales were 5.7%. Wrapping things up, PNC was downgraded at Bank of America. Hess was upgraded to overweight at Barclays. Constellation Brands upgraded to buy at Goldman Sachs. And Boeing upgraded to overweight at Morgan Stanley with a price target of $450. Live from the First of Breaking News Desk, I'm Bill Maloney. Karen?
All right, thanks, Bill. And just a little more here on Target. It also said its chief financial officer, Kathy Smith, will be retiring. It's among a series of leadership changes. The company is conducting a search for its next CFO. And to hear live breaking news over your Bloomberg, type squawk on your terminal, S-Q-U-A-W-K. That's a Bloomberg Business Flash. Now here is Michael Barr with more on what's going on around the world. Michael.
Thank you very much, Karen. President Donald Trump will travel to McAllen, Texas today to visit a Border Patrol station for a roundtable on immigration and border security. The president is trying to bolster his case for the border wall after negotiations with the Democrats collapsed over funding for the wall. South Korean President Moon Jae-in says a second summit between President Trump and North Korea's Kim Jong-un is imminent. In sports, the New York Jets have hired former Miami Dolphins coach Adam Gase as their new head coach. In the NBA, the Nets won along with the Celtics and Wizards. Finally, it is that time when people are getting rid of Christmas trees, the live ones. One woman in Springfield, Virginia, should have gotten rid of hers sooner. She says an ornament on her live Christmas tree has produced some interesting presents. WJLA TV reports more than 100 praying mantises popped out of a brown egg case. What was under one of the branches of Molly Cruz's tree?
More than 100?
More than 100.
Wow.
And they made themselves at home crawling on the walls and ceilings.
Goodness.
Now, if it was me, I'd be yelling, oh, Lordy, and grabbing a can of Raid.
Yeah.
But Cruz is a veterinarian, so she captured the praying mantises and is feeding them fruit flies.
Oh.
So she's got a house full of praying mantises and fruit flies.
That's
and eventually,
a lot of insects.
Oh, man. She hopes to find the praying mantises a new home, perhaps with organic gardeners who treasure the insects because they eat other bugs. But for now, she says next year she's going for an artificial tree.
Yeah, I mean, it's not warm enough for how does this happen this time of year?
This is what she said. The things are crawling all over the house. Oh, man.
That sounds like Creepshow. Terrifying.
Global News, 24 hours a day on air and at TikTok on Twitter, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. Now, there's a visual to leave everyone with. Yeah. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg, Nathan.
This wasn't cockroaches. My gosh. Thank you, Michael. We're live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studios. We're at 6:50 on Wall Street. Time to check what else is going on in D.C. Some of the top stories in our nation's capital include day 20 of the partial government shutdown. President Trump will be outside Washington later today, visiting McAllen, Texas, along the southern border as he continues to make his case for a wall. Treasury Secretary Steven Mnuchin briefs House Democrats later today on plans to lift sanctions on three companies tied to Russian billionaire Oleg Deripaska. Let's get more on where things stand in the shutdown negotiations. Bloomberg Washington reporter Kathleen Hunter is back with us now. I don't imagine much negotiating is going to be happening today, Kate, with the president out of town.
I would think not. And, you know, obviously yesterday's negotiations, to put it mildly, didn't go well with Trump storming out of the meeting. Democrats, Nancy Pelosi especially, had very harsh words for him afterwards and basically described him as being petulant and his approach to the negotiations as pathetic. So I think it's safe to say that they're pretty far apart now, and there doesn't seem to be any indication that they could be moving any closer together. If anything, it seems like their talks are just creating more acrimony at this point.
No, it should be said for people who have followed President Trump from his time in the private sector, storming out of meetings isn't exactly something we haven't seen from citizen Trump in the past.
That's true. I mean, anyone who's watched The Apprentice knows that this is kind of his, personality or his style in terms of being a bit confrontational and can, has a temper, that sort of thing. So I think in that way, it's, not surprising. I think it's just also not conducive necessarily to moving the sides closer together in a place like Washington where compromise often rules the day.
I wonder if both sides, as they do, seem to be entrenched in their sides, whether we could see, as the president makes this trip down to the border, a declaration of a national emergency.
Well, I think it's interesting to note that even before the meeting yesterday, Sarah Sanders, the White House press secretary, was stressing to reporters at the White House that that option, that declaring a national emergency, was still something that was very much on the table. Trump didn't do that. A lot of people expected that he might in his primetime radio or primetime television address to the nation on Tuesday night. So I think that, you raise a good point. He's going to the border today. I think that particularly given how the talks went yesterday in terms of things blowing up and there was kind of a breakdown, I think that increases the likelihood we could see him declare a national emergency today, particularly since he is going to the border or shortly after his return. It seems as though incentive to try to take a move that would bypass Congress is only increased by the fact that there doesn't seem to be a real path forward or even the possibility now of a path forward through negotiations with the Democrats.
But that path might bypass Congress. But as we've said in the past, it's a path that could lead him into the courts.
That's right. So it's, it's a little it's almost like, if he were to try to bypass the legislative branch, it could end up just kind of running square into the judicial branch, because if he does declare a national emergency, that's almost certainly going to draw an immediate legal challenge. Experts say that, declaring an emergency, a national security emergency over something like what's going on at the border would be a break from historically what that law has been used for. It's a 1976 law, I believe, and was used, for instance, after the Iran hostage crisis. crisis and in the aftermath of the 9/11 terrorist attacks. But I think that this would be seen by many as being outside of the scope of presidential powers, so would be likely to draw a quick challenge in the courts.
I mean, where could this leave negotiations in getting the government reopened? I mean, the Republicans have held pretty firm with the president up to this point, but tomorrow a whole bunch of federal workers go without a paycheck.
Yeah, 800,000 of them, roughly. And so I think that, you know, and that's not just in Washington, that's throughout the country. And so I think that that really is going to start being a point where we see the pain of the shutdown really kind of hitting home. And then, of course, there's a ripple effect to that because, you know, as people aren't getting paid, then they're not able potentially to pay their mortgages or their rents, that sort of thing. They're not spending money in the broader economy. So I think that, you know, this impact of the shutdown has been somewhat contained up until now, partly because the beginning of it occurred over the holidays, but now we're really starting to see it hit home, and I think that that could put pressure on Republicans to break with Trump and essentially call on Majority Leader Mitch McConnell in the Senate to allow a vote on a House-passed measure that doesn't include funding for the wall but would reopen the government.
Bloomberg Washington reporter Kathleen Hunter, lots to watch. Thanks as always. Read more about these stories on Bloomberg.com or on the Bloomberg Terminal. Follow all the latest on Bloomberg Radio in Washington, Bloomberg 99.1 and 105.7 FM. HD2, 655 on Wall Street.
The following commentary is from Bloomberg Opinion.
I'm Jonathan Bernstein, a columnist for Bloomberg Opinion. Donald Trump didn't have much to work with in his Oval Office address. He's an unpopular president, pushing a border wall even less popular than he is. He's asking for taxpayer money despite his campaign fantasy that Mexico would pay for it, and trying to blame lawmakers for the shutdown after bragging he would take responsibility. Still, his dud of a speech performance was revealing. Not only has Trump never done the practice to master the art of reading from a teleprompter, but he remains astonishingly bad at reading speechwriter prose. It's true that these presidential addresses are overhyped and don't really have much potential to change public opinion even when done well. Still, what's most striking is how much Trump sabotages his own presidency by just refusing to do the basic prep work. Meanwhile, the shutdown goes on. Trump's approval ratings have been falling, and nothing happened Tuesday night to ease the pressure on Republicans in Congress to bail on the president and try to end this thing. I'm Jonathan Bernstein. For more opinion, please go to Bloomberg.com/opinion or OPIN Go on the Bloomberg Terminal.
This has been Bloomberg Opinion.
You can hear Bloomberg Opinion commentaries every weekday at this time. Karen?
Time for the Bloomberg Small Business Report. Here's John Tucker.
And good morning, Karen. On a recent Saturday, Tom Ayers wrapped up a day of work at his bicycle shop in Atlantic Highlands, New Jersey. He turned out the lights and locked the door. After 41 years, Tom's Atlantic Cyclery is closing for good. The business of selling bikes isn't what it used to be, and that's in large part because kids are more interested in other things.
That's a big part of it. Generation is doing other things. Of course, the internet and all that has changed things, but also parents and so on, and they also are not, they don't feel good about having their kids bike ride because they feel like it's dangerous.
Stats are hard to come by. Ken McLeod, policy director of the League of American Bicyclists, say while ridership is overall flat, it's been declining among youngsters. As for Tom Ayers, he had built a loyal customer base in part by organizing local bike races as towns boosted fees and increased regulations. Those races disappeared, and with them, an important source of potential business. And that's the Small Business Report, Karen.
All right, John Tucker, thank you. We continue to watch shares of Target up 1% in the early trade. And Bloomberg Surveillance with Tom Keene and Jonathan Farrow straight ahead on a day when futures are lower. S&P futures down 14 points this morning. For Nathan Hager, I'm Karen Moscow, and this is Bloomberg.